The struggle against discrimination and racism in our country has a long and sad history. And for the LGBT community, the struggle continues. Welcome to The Full Story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. And as always, we welcome your comments and thoughts about today's program. You can email us at tfs@wshu.org. Follow us on Twitter. We're at Full Story, WSHU. The same thing on Facebook. And if you'd like to leave a voicemail, our number is 833-CALL-TFS. That's 833-225-5837. Let's start today's program by talking with David Kilmnick. David is president and CEO of the LGBT Network, which is based on Long Island. Over the last 24 years, David has devoted his life to ending homophobia and transphobia. He has and others have created a successful nonprofit organization. It serves tens of thousands of LGBT people every single year. And the network also reaches an additional 100,000 or so people, probably more, through education and outreach. David, welcome to The Full Story. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Ron. Thanks for having us.
What inspired you to establish the network, the LGBT network?
About 25 years ago, I was a graduate student at Stony Brook University studying for my master's in social work. And it came down to our last semester where we had to choose to either do a master's thesis or a master's project. And I thought I was being a slick student and saying, oh, I don't feel like writing another paper, so I'm going to do a project. And my project was to create a curricula to go out into Long Island schools to talk about what it was like to grow up LGBT. Now, this was back in 1993, so, over 25 years ago. And so I created this curricula, got into a few schools, and when I say got into, sounds like it was a secretive mission and on the down low, and it kind of was at that time, and conducted about six workshops from Mineola all the way out to Montauk and places in between. And no matter where we conducted this workshop, the reaction from the students would be the same at the end of it. What would happen at the end of the workshop was that a couple of students would linger around, they would shuffle their papers, they would hit some stuff on the floor so that everyone could leave the class and no one would see them coming up to ask the gay speaker a question. So whether this workshop was held in Mineola, in the Sachem District, in Ronkonkoma, or out in East Hampton, out on the East End, the students asked the same exact question, and it was simple. They came up to me and they said, is there any place I can go just to meet other people like myself? And back in 1993, there was nothing. And I was like, wow, you know what? I said, we got to do something more. We got to give a place where these kids could just be kids and can have a safe place to just be themselves and be teenagers. And that's when I started an organization called Legally, a Long Island Gay and Lesbian Youth. And fast forward 25 years later, as you mentioned, our organization is out educating hundreds of thousands of people each year in over 110 school districts on the island and over close to 100 schools now in New York City as well. And since then, Legally has morphed into a network of LGBT nonprofits serving our community throughout the lifespan. So, as you know, there's no short name in our community, so every one of our organization's name is a little bit long. So we have services and advocacy for LGBT Elders Long Island, which serve our seniors and elders, which is a huge need as well. We have the Long Island LGBT Community Center, Long Island Gay and Lesbian Youth. We have the Queens LGBT Community Center, and we have the overarching administrative arm for all the organizations called the LGBT Network.
One of these days, everyone needs to get together and just get this down to a nice short term, right?
It would be nice, but it's going the other way. We're adding more letters. I don't think it's going to shorten up.
So here it was, 1993, and you're out there and you're meeting these kids, and it's great that you're thinking of this and starting it. But at the meantime, it must have been sad because I'm sure growing up on the island, you had the same thoughts. How do I meet someone? How do I relate to others in my community? And it's great that you're doing this, but there must have been some sadness involved with it.
At that particular time, the sadness really was seeing these kids just really seeking a place to just be themselves. I also saw that as some strength and resilience, that they had the strength to come up and ask me a question. You know, and when I was growing up, I'm 51 years old now, but when I was growing up, there was no education in our schools. There was no organization. There was no Legally or LGBT network coming into our schools. I grew up in Far Rockaway, Queens, so on the border of Long Island. And But there was no education at that time. So the sheer, you know, the fact that I was there as a graduate student at that time, talking to the students about LGBT issues or about sexual orientation, you know, was a sign of progress. It's a shame that it had to take till 1993, but also that the, you know, the fact that the students were, you know, were really resilient. In the way that they wanted to come up and ask the question, you know, and in a way come out to me, was hopeful more than sad, I think. And that's what, you know, that's when I said that we needed to, when I decided that, you know, this project needed to become something more than just a master's project. It needed to become something that would change culture and change life on Long Island for generations.
What are the main issues right now that you find members of the LGBT community facing on the island?
You know, I think, you know, it's a little bit ironic that, you know, some of the stuff that we faced in 1993 we're still facing today. While we've made a lot of progress, and over the 25 years in terms of some legislation, of course, marriage equality, most recently, you know, the end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell when Obama was president, to just this year in the New York State Legislature, and I can't believe it took this long, but I mean that gives you some indication of, you know, the times that we're living in, but that we finally passed gender, which is to protect the transgender community from discrimination. And also the ban on conversion therapy, which just was a evil and horrible practice, trying to tell someone that they could, you know, we could have therapy to make you not gay, which is absolutely absurd. And I can't believe it was legal up until this year. So we've made a lot of progress in 25 years. But what we're still facing is, you know, our kids, our LGBT kids, are at higher risk for bullying. They're still at a high risk for suicide because they still don't feel safe in some don't feel safe in their communities, in their homes, and et cetera. And it's no wonder, you know, that we're still living in that type of environment with the administration in Washington right now that really has attempted to legislate. I say attempted because they're not too successful at what they do, but they're certainly legislating with hate and discrimination, and that, and we're seeing the rise of white nationalism, the rise of the folks on the right, or the folks that wear these MAGA hats, you know, that feel empowered and emboldened to speak out and be homophobic or anti-immigrant or racist or sexist, et cetera. So some of the issues that we faced 25 years ago, we still face today. We still need to be out there to create safer spaces for our for all generations, really, for our older generations, too, who grew up in a time where discrimination was legal. And so when they go into assisted living facilities or nursing homes, you know, we need to make sure that they age in place and they also are able to be themselves in their elder years, too, and not have to go back into the closet. So we still struggle today with creating those safer spaces, you know, just because we are successful in winning some legislation, which is a great thing, which we need to do. We need to have these on the books to protect people from discrimination and in housing and public accommodations and jobs and et cetera. We also need to make sure that we're doing our work on the ground to make sure every community is safe, not just where there are LGBT centers, and we have four of those right now, to make our services more accessible to folks. But we, and our philosophy, which is how we started 25 years ago, is to be out into the community, out in the schools, out in the healthcare institutions, because we need to make every single community safe.
David, we have about 2 minutes left. With that time, what message, what advice would you have for someone who's listening to the program right now, who doesn't know where to turn to, they're somewhat at risk, what should they be doing?
So, you know, for those that are listening out there that don't know where to turn to, you know, the message is to know that you're not alone, that There are, thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of people just in your region, or hundreds of thousands if you're talking about the, you know, or million in the New York metro area, who are LGBT, and being gay is, or being LGBT, is really about love. And love is not, it's a little more than that, of course, but love is not the problem in our society today, right? So that there are so many people who are like you, there are so many people who support your right to be, your right to be free, and your right to be happy, and your right to love, and that this is not just an LGBT issue, this is a human issue. And that everyone out there who's listening could get involved in furthering the cause to make our community safer for all, and make sure that our young kids could grow up and be whoever they want to be and prosper and be, you know, contribute to society greatly, as many folks have done, are doing now and have done prior, and that to contact the LGBT network. We will come to you if needed, or we have a center that is probably within 30 to 40 minutes of where you live, so that where either you can get direct services, you can volunteer, you could come in and show your leadership, your talents, etc. We have something for everyone.
And the phone number for how someone can contact you?
Sure. In Suffolk County, they could contact us at 631-665-2300. In Nassau County, they could contact us at 516-323-0011. And if they're in New York City, they can contact us at 718-514-2155. Or if you only quote one of those numbers, we could connect you to those other places too.
I will give those numbers again after the break. David Kilmnick, President, CEO of the LGBT Network on Long Island. David, it was a pleasure. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
We continue our conversation about the struggle against discrimination and for equal rights and treatment for the LGBTQ community. With me in the studio is Raven Mathern. I hope I pronounced that right, Raven. I apologize if I didn't. Connecticut's first openly transgender lawmaker. She serves on Stamford's Board of Rep. Thanks for being here. On the phone is Connecticut State Rep. Jeff Curry. Representative Curry is a Democrat. He represents the 11th District, which is East Hartford, Manchester, South Windsor. He's one of two openly LGBT members of the Connecticut General Assembly. Here in the studio is Connor Pfeiffer, who is the development officer of the Triangle Community Center in Norwalk. And as they say on their webpage, Triangle Community Center is Fairfield County's leading provider of programming and resources to nurture growth and connection within the LGBT community. And finally, we're pleased to welcome Robin McCallan, founder and executive director of True Colors, based in Hartford. True Colors is a nonprofit organization that works with other social service agencies, schools, organizations, and within communities to ensure that the needs of sexual and gender minority youth are both recognized and competently met. Welcome all. It's a pleasure to have everyone with us today.
Happy to be here.
Thanks.
Representative Curry, can I start with you, sir?
Absolutely.
The legislature is right in the middle of everything now. The session is in full bloom. Is Connecticut doing enough to address the needs and concerns of the LGBT community? And if not, what do you propose?
I think we could always be doing more, and I think the folks in the room and on the phone as well could agree with that. But we have made some strides, and we will continue to make strides. It's great to have an able and willing partner in Representative Allie Brennan, as you mentioned, the other openly LGBT legislator. And Connecticut is fortunate enough where we have a number of allies on both sides of the aisle. Many of these issues don't come down to a partisan divide, given the need that they see that we have here in the state for our LGBT community. So we have a number of proposed legislation that we're going to be working through the process this session.
Okay. Can you give me some of those priorities?
Absolutely. So one that was proposed by the two of us, and in addition to Senator Martin Looney out of New Haven, was the ban on the gay and transgender panic defense. This has been something that we've seen a number of states take up over the last couple of years. And for folks who aren't aware of what the gay and trans panic defense is, it's basically a legal strategy where they're going to ask a jury to find that a victim's sexual orientation or gender identity is to blame for the defendant's violent reaction, including murder. The most recognized case that this was used in was actually the Matthew Shepard case back in 1998. So we view it as a loophole that folks may attempt to use when trying to push back on why they acted in a manner that they did. We hope to have some fantastic bipartisan support on that. We're looking forward to having a public hearing in the coming weeks in our Judiciary Committee on that particular piece of legislation. We're also looking to put together a statewide LGBT health and human service network, something similar to what New York and California have already done. And given the fact that, you know, Connecticut is a very diverse state in terms of race, ethnicity, and income, that translates to be that the LGBT community is also diverse across those lines and makes it even more important that we address the needs of those who may be even more marginalized due to factors beyond sexual orientation or gender identity, such as their location in the state, housing, aging, and those sorts of variables. And another one that we are going to be pushing is an act concerning the prevention of HIV. Unfortunately, we had a report come to us from the Department of Public Health in which we saw an uptick in HIV cases in 2017. And so what we're looking to do is remove the parental consent that's needed for those under 18 to access PrEP and also work into the conversation a way in which that, you know, for people who are under 18 on their parents or guardians insurance, that no information is going to be then sent over to those folks if an under 18 decides to take advantage of that particular method of HIV prevention.
That's sad to hear that there is an uptick, because I had heard some reports that actually it was going in the other direction, and I was trying to be hopeful for the future, but I understand what you're saying. Raven, thank you for being here. How are things in Stanford?
Of course, thank you for having me. things in Stanford are about what we're seeing across the state right now. I believe that same little uptick we're seeing in HIV cases is also, you know, going on in Stanford, and we're looking to do anything that we can to try and get services to these people. It's one of the things that I know, and thankfully Connor with TCC is here as well, but it's one of the things that TCC works really, really hard on, is trying to make sure that people that are in need of HIV services are getting access to that.
What made you decide to enter the political field?
So I was raised that if you see a problem, it's not enough to talk about it. You have to do something about it. And I was in a position where I found myself with time on my hands, and I don't like to sit down and twiddle my thumbs. I like to get my thumbs dirty and work on something. So running for office seemed to fill that quite well.
And how have you... Well, first of all, I know the transition to government from, you were a martial arts instructor before, and I know now that the transition to working in government must have been a difficult one.
It was, but thankfully I've always had a passion for hard work, and thankfully that translates well to politics, because there's always something to put your energies into. There's always something that needs attention, and there's always constituents to work for. So that ended up being, for me personally, ended up being a great source to put my energies into, but specifically was able to give me a avenue to work and improve my community.
I'm sure Representative Curry can give you some advice about how to negotiate the political minefields that are out there.
Well put.
Connor, thanks for being here.
Certainly.
Tell us about Triangle, the Triangle Center, which is in Norwalk.
We're headquartered in Norwalk. We've also got a satellite facility here in Bridgeport, actually, where we operate with the Center for Family Justice. So we're Fairfield County's LGBT Community Center. We provide a lot of services. We've got over 24 programs, ranging from youth groups to recovery programs, to peer support groups. We've got a special case management program for LGBTQ people in need, and a drop-in center where people can have a safe space off the streets. We do a lot of work. We put on one of the biggest Pride festivals in the state, Pride in the Park. It's coming up on June the 8th, by the way, listeners, if you want to attend.
Mm. And I'm sorry, where is that going to be?
It's going to be at Matthews Park in Norwalk. We're really proud of a lot of the work that we do for the community.
And when you say youth, what ages are we talking about?
Generally speaking, we're speaking late teens to young adults. So generally speaking, high school ages and things like that. So through our case management program, if we do have someone who's younger, we might potentially refer them out to something that specializes in children. But for I would generally say high school age and north.
You didn't get a chance to listen to the interview that we had in the first segment of our program. It was pre-recorded a little bit earlier today. And David and I were talking about how when he first went, I believe it was in 1993, and he would go to schools and he would talk with the teens in there, and there would always be one who would drop the pencil or something like that and be the last one because they wanted to come up to him and share and say, where can I find people like me so I can hang out and have some friendship? Is that still going on today, especially in Fairfield County?
It is. It is still happening today. And that's one of the reasons why we're in business. You know, I mentioned some of the work that we do and what we do, but not why we do it. So if you are LGBTQ, there are some bread and butter issues that you're more likely to face in our community that you're less likely to face. If you are heterosexual or cisgender, you're more likely to be homeless. You're more likely to be underemployed. You're more likely to face certain health issues. And you're more likely to face isolation. So we provide social programs. Actually, that's one of the reasons why we have our drop-in center, too. So people come to TCC, whether they want to do something like go to a program or just brush up a resume or just hang out and watch Netflix, which is a pretty popular option with us. And you get set up with our case management staff if you need a little bit of help with something in your life, be it with name change, going before probate court, getting help with housing, employment, any of these issues. They're quite common at TCC.
Or instead of watching Netflix, you could also, you know, listen to WSHU. And
that's an excellent choice. That's an excellent choice.
Robin McCallan, founder and executive director of True Colors, based in Hartford. Robin, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for being so patient and waiting. Please tell us about True Colors.
So True Colors does education and advocacy for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, intersex, queer, questioning, two-spirit, same-gender, loving, pansexual, flexual, not straight, not labeling, straight is straight so far, straight with options, straight but stuff happens, gender bending, bi-gender, pan-gender, agender, asexual, non-binary, and other sexual and gender minority youth. We work with teens.
Okay, hold on one second. I was writing that down, and I got the first three.
I always start with the, you know, the litany of the language, really just to make the point that the language is changing, and how young people in particular are describing themselves and their experiences can be very different than many of us, even those of us in the LGBTQ plus community, grew up knowing and hearing. So True Colors does a lot of education. We train over 5,000 helping professionals a year in schools and juvenile justice and in child welfare in particular, because it's our belief that, you know, if you're working with youth and families, some of the youth and families that you're working with are going to be members of the LGBTQ plus community. So in order for you to do your job competently, you have to make sure that you are competently meeting the needs of that population as well, which is a lot of the training that we do. We have we run the world's largest LGBTQI ABCDFG conference. It's March 22nd and 23rd at UConn in Storrs. We have Connecticut's only mentoring program for LGBTQ plus youth in out-of-home care. All of the kids in our program have been rejected by their families of origin, most often on the basis of their gender identity or sexual orientation. So we match LGBTQ and ally adults with LGBTQ youth in foster care, in residential treatment, in detention, and other, and group homes, things like that.
That's so sad to hear. I just can't, as a parent, I can't imagine a parent rejecting a child. It breaks your heart to hear that.
Yeah, and it's still, I mean, it really still happens that sometimes a young person comes out and everybody's fine. Their school's fine, their family's fine, their friends are fine. Sometimes a young person comes out and their entire world implodes. And we're finding that it's both about sexual orientation, but increasingly about gender identity and expression. I think in the last couple of years, I've done maybe 20 trainings in elementary schools in Connecticut where children as young as 5 are making social transitions from one gender to another. And, you know, schools are trying to figure out how to do that, and that more and more young people are also identifying as non-binary, so neither male nor female, but some combination or something different than that. And so outside of the binary male-female, then, you know, what sports team do you play on, and what locker room do you change in, starts to get very confusing for folks to figure out. And We also do a lot of youth leadership stuff. So we have someone who goes to the gender and sexuality alliances across the state and does development work with them and GSA summits. We have a youth leadership team that manages our we have every Friday night from September to June. We have free activities in Hartford and then once a month in Bridgeport that are social and recreational activities and offer safe opportunities for LGBT.
So it sounds like you are busy all the time. Representative Curry, I want to bring you in because with the number of these issues, I can just imagine how confusing it might be to some of the other representatives, senators in the General Assembly when you're trying to explain the issues to them.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's great, though, that they're willing to sit down and want to talk through the issues with us and actually try to have some level of understanding, because many of them haven't lived this themselves. Many of them don't even have family who have lived this themselves. But the more that we can speak with them, bring advocates to the Capitol, the Legislative Office Building, to have those discussions. You know, Robin McCalin is one of the fiercest advocates that we have in the state of Connecticut, and I'm going to give a nice little plug here and let you all know that she's being honored on April 28th by Justice for All GLAAD's 2019 event. So we're really excited to really prop her up and celebrate all the successes that she's had and the help that she's given the entire state of Connecticut.
Raven, you and I were talking before the program about how times are changing and about whether or not some of the older views are fading away. Have you found that in the last few years? Do you find that in Stamford, especially with your election, that some of the views are not what they used to be?
So it's actually interesting. I kind of went into it expecting a lot of people to be fairly headstrong or uneducated on it. And before I really had the opportunity to get my fingers into the legislation, so to speak, a couple of my other fellow legislators passed a rule change where they were removing gendered pronouns from the Board of Representatives rules. And it was one of those things that it's relatively minor. It doesn't affect the way the rules are enforced. It has no change on that. It's just an act of inclusion. But to have fellow legislators that are not inherent members of the community take those kinds of steps just at seeing a trans person elected was, I think, offered an interesting snapshot into the changing political landscape. I don't believe that these are people that are resistant to change. I believe it's simply they have not yet been presented with an argument that makes sense to what they've experienced in their world.
Connor, do you find a change nowadays, especially since you're located in Fairfield County, do you find a change in the landscape the last few years, or do you think a lot more needs to be done currently?
Certainly the second one. There are, I remember when I first started at TCC, this was maybe early 2014, this is before we had a case management program. One of the first phone calls that I got from my desk was a young man who had been kicked out of his home because he came out to his parents as gay. We still see people being discriminated against, even though Connecticut has very rigorous laws against discrimination in a lot of respects. It doesn't mean they're always enforced, and it doesn't mean that people necessarily feel like they have the support in the network to push back and to fight for themselves. So that's where we come in. That's where organizations like Robin's come in, like True Colors. And some of our partners like the New Haven Pride Center, Lambda Legal, et cetera. There is a lot that has to be done, especially around housing, especially around making sure that trans people are treated with respect and dignity. In things from the corporate world to other care providers, other nonprofits, medicine. That's why TCC has a training program, actually. So we will go into businesses, we'll go into care providers, even local government, and train them on the LGBT experience, some of the language around what it means to be LGBT, and basically how to treat people right. Because I think at the end of the day, that is something that a lot of people want, and with or without malice, you know, sometimes people just get left behind.
We have about 45 seconds before we have to take a break. Do you find that many of the businesses and the governments are receptive to your message?
Yes, we do. Short answer. So we work with plenty of corporate partners for TCC for programming and things like that. Also, local government, particularly Stamford, which I'm so happy is represented here today, and the city of Norwalk. A lot of our municipalities are very good about being proactive.
Robin, since I know you work so closely with the representative, if you had your wishes for this legislative session, just one thing, what would you want the state to do?
Wow, that's a hard question because I definitely am supporting all the things that they're doing already. You know, the PrEP bill and the adding inclusive language to the family medical leave bill. I think, you know, and the panic defense. So I guess it's hard to say one thing because our constituents are so diverse and need, you know, so much. I certainly would love to see some work in preventing some of the discrimination that's happening around LGBT people who are also undocumented. Mm. That, you know, some of what's been happening with ICE and it is just, in my opinion, really unconscionable and inhuman. And I mean, it impacts all of the people that are involved, but it also impacts the people who are LGBTQ. We just went to a rally in Hartford recently about a young woman who is going to be deported. She came here as a 2-year-old in a same-sex relationship, not married, with children, and, you know, likely to lose, you know, to be deported because she's not here with the right documentation. And, you know, and she also doesn't have the legal relationships in some ways that some other folks had. So that, I think, was a real challenging thing. One of the things that's coming up for us a lot is, you know, Connecticut, and Jeff was really instrumental in making this happen, is Connecticut passed legislation last year making it illegal for licensed clinicians to do conversion therapy on minors. And we know that conversion therapy is very damaging to people, you know, psychologically, physically, and otherwise. But Connecticut has incredibly broad religious exemptions. And one of the ways that plays out is that licensed clinicians are often not the ones who are doing conversion therapy on our young people. It's often, you know, people with some particular religious affiliation who are doing it, and there's a number of organizations in Connecticut that are actively seeking to recruit, you know, and engage young people in, you know, this, you know, 10-step program to change your identity, you know, which we know doesn't work and which is really damaging.
And it's actually called a 10-step program?
Yes, it's a 10-step program to changing your sexual orientation or gender identity and expression. And, you know, and it mostly involves, you know, sort of negative reinforcement and you know, trying to make yourself sick when you have a same-sex attraction. We know that it doesn't, you know, we know it doesn't work. And it's very down. All it changes is people's behavior, not their identity. And, you know, for adults, you know, you want to do something like that for yourself. Do you? But if you're a kid and you're trying to figure out who you are, you should be doing that in a neutral environment where people want you to grow into a happy, healthy, productive adult who loves whoever you love safely, you know?
Mm.
So, I don't know. I think that, and I don't know that can be addressed legislatively because, you know, we do have the separation of church and state, and Connecticut tends to have very broad religious exemptions. So, for example, you could be a lesbian working in the kitchen in a Catholic school, and, you know, somebody finds out that you're lesbian and you could get fired, even though there's no, you know, you're not doing anything that's ministerial or related to the dogma of the church. That's broader than even the federal.
Well, yeah, and there's that case that's been written about recently, and I know it's been all over the news and on some of the talk shows, and obviously the Catholic Church and some of the people who've worked in certain parishes who've come out in same-sex marriages, and the
right,
students,
and
the
person,
and they lost their positions. And in the meantime, the teachers, the fellow teachers, the students, the parents all love these workers, these teachers, and they say, why does this matter?
Right. Because as long as, you know, if I could understand that if you want a job in a religious institution where your job is to live and promulgate and, you know, sort of proselytize around the dogma of your particular faith, then of course you should, you know, if you're going to be a minister in a congregationalist church, you should be a congregationalist minister. You may not want a Jewish rabbi in that position, right? I get that. But if you are the person who is, you know, paying the bills, or, you know, that doesn't have to be, we don't have to have everybody have the same, you know, religious perspective, and I don't think there should be an exemption to basic discrimination.
Representative Curry, I'm sorry, I know the representative has been very patient, and can you jump in on this with your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are able to take action to remove these religious exemptions. And, you know, let's make no mistake about it. Conversion therapy is simply torture. Mm-hmm. And you know, we don't allow a priest to beat on a child. So why would we allow them to emotionally and sometimes through this process and physically abuse them? And so that is a conversation that we did have when we were moving something like this through a year or two ago. But we knew that this was a good first step, and this is what the step that many of the other states around the country were taking. But by no means is this the end of the conversation when it comes to the religious exemption piece.
Raven, I'd like to bring you into the conversation because you know that there's some listeners right now who are saying, you know, I just don't get this. I don't understand. What would your message be to them?
So I have my background in religion is I was raised a Jehovah's Witness. I completely understand, where a lot of these exemptions come from that belief, for that belief system to exist. I understand that. However, it comes to me as a matter of putting one's own religious beliefs before another's well-being and safety and freedom of choice. And for me, it resonates a little darkly, unfortunately, because for me to go back to my old religion, I would have to present to somebody that I am not. But now I would have to present to somebody that also my neighbors did not elect to represent them. Mm. So it's for me, it's a little bit of a dichotomy between I could look at my previous religion or I can serve my people in the role that they asked me to serve them in. So when we put these religious questions up to debate like this, the result is the minority always gets squashed, period. And unfortunately, that ruins progress. It makes it so that we're not able to go forward together.
Religion and politics, always a dangerous mix. Connor, you've been very patient sitting here. What are your hopes? We have about 10 minutes or so left in the program. If 5 years from now, if you look back and said, you know, I'm glad we did these things, what would you like to see happen? There's a new administration in Hartford. Obviously, the Democrats are running both houses, the Senate and the House. What actions would you like to see taken to improve the situation for everyone?
Right. Well, on that note, I just do want to stress TCC is a nonpartisan organization. Mm-hmm. And we do have a wonderful working relationship with both sides of the aisle. Moving forward, you know, or, you know, 5 years from now, if I look back to this day and, you know, hopefully there'll be some progress by then. Some of the things I do want to see is more awareness about what's going on in the community. You know, I have spoken with some people in the political realm because that was my line of work before coming to the center. And they said, well, you know, TCC is doing great work. We love your Pride Festival. But in Connecticut, you have marriage equality. In Connecticut, you have some employment non-discrimination. And I want people to understand that just because we have legal equality doesn't mean that we have lived equality. It doesn't mean that a kid is guaranteed to be safe when they are coming out. It doesn't mean that an older adult is going to be in a assisted living facility with a staff and others there that understand what it means to be them and that won't isolate them.
Mm. It's interesting what you say, because we had a program about racism about a month and a half ago, mm-hmm. and where the speaker said racism has improved in the United States in the last few decades. But what is there is institutionalized racism, hidden racism in terms of where communities are located, schooling, and so on. So while we may look at each other in a different way and treat each other differently, there are still built-in racist tendencies. Same for the LGBT community?
Similar principle,
okay.
If I follow. So there are, you know, certain insidious things that you know, people don't necessarily think about, that people might not even try to accommodate. And at the end of the day, you know, any marginalized community, including ours, is up against certain barriers. And sometimes some people very simply need a little extra help. And it doesn't mean that we are trying to be, quote unquote, more equal than any other group. It's just that we need a little extra help to get us on track, to get us towards full equality.
Representative Curry, how far are we from full equality?
We're far, but we're making gains. You know, I think one of the great things to highlight is our Kid Governor program, and Ella Briggs, who is a fifth grader out of East Haddam. She goes to school at Anna Grace in Avon. She is self-identified as part of the LGBT community, and she ran on a platform of pride, hope, and love. And she was successful in her candidacy. And this was something that sixth graders from across, or fifth graders from across the state participated in. And so to really have that moment to see that kids that young are getting it and understanding that there's a change, and just that, Matt, that acceptance that they feel is just really positive and showing that we are making gains throughout the state.
Robin, I know you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I think that if in 5 years, what I would love is for people to just recognize that everybody has a right to belong and be valued as contributing members of the society and the community. I would, you know, somebody talks about, we talk a lot about youth leadership, and one of my coworkers made a point that one of the reasons that so many of our young people are such incredible leaders is because somebody stole their childhood. You know, that they became leaders because there was some dramatic, traumatic experience. Like, I think about the young people of Parkland and, you know, in other places where young people stand up to leadership because they feel like that's the only way that they can make a difference, and it's as a result of, you know, a traumatic experience that they had. And I think that that's not true for the Kid Governor, and that's what I want. You know, that when we went to the Kid Governor presentation and I watched the children in that school and the inclusivity and the respect that people had for each other, I thought to myself, oh my God, these fifth graders are creating the world that I want to live in.
Mm.
And I think that's how I'll leave it. That's the world of
I know, I understand what you're saying, but in the same time, there's part of me that's thinking, why can't a kid just be a kid? Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Why do they have to go? Why do they have to be the leaders?
Right. Yep.
Well, you know, I just had the pleasure of meeting Ella. Ella came down to an event in Norwalk that TCC was helping to promote. And Ella's a terrific, very smart, very brave in a lot of ways, fifth grader. And, you know, Connecticut's lucky to have her. You know, I think WSHU should hit her up for an interview if possible. Yeah,
it sounds like she'd be great on the air.
Yes, I certainly think so.
We're always looking for fill-in talk show hosts. You never know. Raven, what are your final thoughts? We have about a minute or so.
My final thought? When I grow up, I want to be like Ella Briggs. That's my final thought. But it, also in the time frame she's born in, because I really do believe that things are getting better. I think children are our future. Not to be cliche, but they really are. But in my own personal experience, I started my transition when I was working with children.
Mm-hmm.
So a vast majority of my first few months coming out, I was teaching kids professionally. And it was funny because the issues that I had with that always had to do with parents. They never had a thing to do with kids. Kids got it inherently. Part of my job, it was required for people to say yes, sir, to me whenever I gave an order or a command. So I got that hundreds of times a day.
And once again, we should clarify, because you were a martial artist.
Because I was a martial artist, yes.
Instructor.
It was required for my profession. But on my last couple of days there, a couple of students insisted on calling me yes, ma'am. I'm going to cry right now. That insisted on using female pronouns for me in defiance of a lot of the other instructors there. So kids are our future. Kids are, thank goodness, the kids are our hope.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as your future, right now you're in Stanford. You're on the board. Are you hoping for
So I'll tell you what I told you before. I was raised that if you see a problem, to do something about it, not just talk about it. And the more I look around, I see a lot of problems, and that includes at our state level. And I wasn't raised to just talk about that.
I'm hearing state reps, state senate in the future, possibly governor.
We'll see.
All right. Never know about this. Representative Curry, final thoughts from you, sir?
You know, just asking everyone to just stay involved, use your voice, speak up, speak loud, come up to the Capitol, visit us here, join the cause. And Raven, we'd love to have you up here. We definitely need more representation up here in Hartford to help spread the word about all the great work that we are doing and all the work that we need to continue to do.
And Robin, we have 30, 45 seconds for you, please.
Oh, please. I guess my last word is that if you would like more information or want to participate in additional education and an exciting and amazing event, the True Colors Annual Conference is March 22nd and 23rd. It's at UConn in stores. There are workshops for youth and everybody that's responsible for their health and well-being. And then I think the last thing I would say is that we're always looking for people who want to be mentors for our young people, volunteers with the organization, and people who are interested in fostering young people. At any one time in Connecticut, there's about 75 kids who are in restricted levels of care, not because they need to be there, but because there's no families that are willing to take in teenagers. So if you've ever considered or thought about foster parenting, there's a teenager that's looking for a family to love them.
Connor Pfeiffer, you get the final word.
Oh, great. To the listeners out there who, might not be as well-versed in the LGBT community, I would encourage you, if you have anyone who identifies in that community in your life, just to listen. And we're not in this business. We're not doing this advocacy because we think there's something extra special about the community. I mean, I think we're awesome. We're in this business because, like I said before, some people need some extra help. And that's why we're in the business of putting on a Pride Festival, which provides us a little extra visibility and fun. And that's why we provide social services, and everyone at this table is doing something good for the community.
Robin, Connor, Raven, Representative Curry, thank you all.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
That's it for our show today. Julie Ferdino was not our engineer. Joelle is behind the mic today and the board. Our associate producers. Today's program was produced by Christian Carter. Associate producers Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari, Carrie Frank is the digital editor. Ann Lopez is the producer, and Terry Sheridan, our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to all of you for being part of The Full Story.